For members only. Golf Smarter number 442, published on June 24, 2014.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Target-oriented golf with Colin Cromack.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Colin.
Good morning, Fred. I'm delighted to be here again.
It has been a long time since the first time you and I spoke, which was episode number 137 back in July of 2008. So in 6 years' time, I hope that you've not done a lot of changing to your method of teaching, but maybe updated it perhaps. But I've been quoting it for the last 6 years.
Well, I thank you for that, Fred, and you'll be pleased to know that my approach to golf and the methods that I've developed haven't changed. They are as consistent today as they were 6 years ago. But interestingly enough, I've developed a collaboration with a gentleman in America called Dr. Tony Paparo, and I'd like to take the opportunity to introduce his work as well as mine, Fred, to give a refresher on target-oriented golf, and hopefully give you the opportunity to maybe talk to Dr. Paparo with a follow-up show.
Yeah, spell his last name for me, please.
P-I-P-A-R-O.
Okay, and does he have a website as well?
Yes, it's found at mindmasterygolf.com.
Mindmasterygolf.com. Okay. We will look into that, absolutely. And as we're giving URLs, let's give yours, too, real quick to get this started.
Yep, my website is targetorientedgolf.com.
Targetorientedgolf.com. All right, well, now people can listen and decide if they're going to go there or not. But let's talk about where do you want to start? Let me start, okay, because... Yeah. You know, again, it's been a long time since we spoke. I've been talking about the four levels of competence for years, always trying to figure out. Every time I say it, I'm like, wait a minute, is that the order? Did I get it? Is it, you start with and then to conscious, and you got to move. So we're going to get into the details of that so you can really allow me to repeat it smoothly and not screw it up. But I got an email from a listener, John Pappas, up in Santa Rosa, California, and he says, hey, Fred, please bring back Colin Cromack. He is on to something. His insight, golfers cycle between conscious competence and conscious incompetence. You're constantly dragging yourself back down to conscious incompetence. You never give yourself a chance to play golf intuitively. That was a quote from you. He says, and now what John says is, this was a big light bulb moment for me. I've been playing golf for 30 years. For the first 10 years, from ages to 11 to 22, I played intuitively, unconscious competence, down to a 4 handicap. But for the last 20 years, I've been dragging myself back down into conscious incompetence. Now I'm a 15 handicap. What a drag. He says, here's a list of teaching methods that I've tried. And when I say tried, I mean I committed to each method for 1 year at least. 1, Ledbetter. 2, Stack and Tilt. 3, Secret in the Dirt, Mike Maves, Right Foot Inversion Method. 4, Sean Clement, Wrecking Ball Method. 5, Martin Ayers, Wound Right Arm. 6, John Erickson, Bradley Hughes, Advanced Ball Striking, Flat Entry Into Pack. 7, Shoemaker, Fred Shoemaker, Extraordinary Golf. He says, even when I stopped focusing on technique and started using Shoemaker's mental approach, I still approach the mental side as a technique versus... just simply unconscious competence. He says, for example, Shoemaker's club throwing exercise is an eye-opener, so I started thinking about my swing as a throw. My conscious mind was still paying attention to my body actions. Shoemaker is a great coach, but he is still having students focus their conscious minds on body awareness too much, in my opinion. I know he wants us to focus on the target or the club or the ball, something external, but students like me will still focus their conscious mind on a body technique. That's why I'm excited to learn more about Colin Cromack's target-oriented golf. I'm really, really exhausted from cycling between conscious competence and conscious incompetence. Lastly, Colin's question, does the target create anxiety, is a very powerful question for me. The answer for me is no. I find calm in the target versus always finding anxiety by putting my conscious mind on my body actions. Wow, right?
Yeah. And I say that's not uncommon. I mean, at the end of the day, John's gone through a process that many other golfers have been through themselves. And it's this desire to obviously improve in your golf. But the majority of the time, golfers spend their practice cycling between different methods of learning how to swing golf clubs. And now, there is a very different psychological skill set that's required to learn how to play golf, Fred, because learning how to swing, you having your attentional focus on something to do with a body part, a body movement. And some coaches are trying to move the attention away from the body onto the club, but it still takes the individual's conscious mind onto a control of their motor skills. Now, we don't perform anything in our lives successfully, Fred, whilst we're consciously trying to control our physical actions. So the key thing about learning golf and any other life skill is we actually have to shift our conscious mind away from this motor skill so that the motor cortex in our brain, which ultimately has everything that we need to carry out a motor skill, once the skills have been developed, we need to actually tap into that, Fred. But we can't tap into that because we spend all of our lives being taught how to consciously try and control the motor skill. So the individual or the golfer never gets that sense of freedom in their golf game that they get in other aspects of their life, from riding a bike through to driving a car, where we free the conscious mind. So I'd like to just briefly introduce a concept to you, Fred, which it introduces different states of the mind. And it's important to understand this because if we don't know where in the mind we're trying to improve a skill, then it's very difficult to target what it is that we're trying to improve. So you're obviously familiar with people talking about the subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind, Fred, is basically whereby we develop our self-image and our belief systems. They are acquired over a lifetime through our experiences and through people talking to us and telling us things. And we start to develop a belief system about who we are in life. Now, the subconscious mind is different to the non-conscious mind. The non-conscious mind is that part of the brain which is responsible for your motor skills. So when you're an infant, when you're a child, for instance, before you learn language, it's very interesting, Fred, but we learn to walk as infants without actually having learned any language at that time. So the conscious mind or the cognitive process in the prefrontal cortex hasn't developed, all right? So we can't think our way through learning how to walk. We do that process by awareness. And there's often a parent opposite to where we're trying to go, and we stumble slowly towards that other parent. And through a series of repetitious movements, we develop the motor skills for walking. No conscious mind involved in this process, Fred, but we learn to walk. And that skill of walking becomes adaptive. We learn to then crawl and run and skip.
And let's not forget, Colin, that we also learn to fall.
We learn to fall, absolutely.
Which is actually incredibly important. Because you can't learn resiliency if you haven't fallen over.
And it's all done, though, Fred, without any conscious mind involved.
Right.
Through this process. And this is really important to understand in motor skills acquisition. We develop motor skills when we keep the conscious mind out of the picture. Because the conscious mind, in essence, is something that we develop through language and through thinking process, whereby we start to actually give ourselves a sense of direction through our thinking process. But that thinking process isn't very adapted at developing or controlling our body. It's not designed to control the body. That's what the motor cortex is there for. So what we have to do, you see, what happens is when we start to become, we learn language, we start to learn a skill like riding a bike, Fred. Typically what happens is we've learnt language at that time and we start to sort of be very anxious when we are learning to ride a bike, because we are being taught how to control the pedals and our focus is on trying to control the bike at that time, you see. But through a series of repetitious processes, which are constrained by the instrument, the bike, our attention naturally shifts to the road ahead. So what's actually happening is our conscious mind is being allowed to navigate to an external focus. And once that happens, Fred, the external focus allows the non-conscious mind to take over the control of the vehicle. The balancing of the vehicle and the movement of the pedals is all done non-consciously. And you can take this process through any skill that you've ever developed. When you learn to drive a car, initially you're getting instruction. You're getting conscious instruction. You're trying to consciously control the steering, changing the gear, changing the clutch and pressing the accelerator. You're really quite poor at this time. But again, you're constrained by the vehicle. And once you start allowing your attentional focus to shift to the road ahead, your non-conscious mind starts to take over the vehicle, the control of the vehicle. So every situation that occurs in life, we are allowed naturally to go to an external focus, Fred. Is this all good? So the external focus is the key thing. It allows us to pass over the motor skill to the non-conscious mind.
Is there a subtle difference between non-conscious and unconscious, or is it a huge difference?
Well, this is an important thing, Fred. The unconscious mind is another thing altogether. Mm. The unconscious mind is when you're asleep. And when you're asleep, you're aware of the environment, but you're not paying attention to anything other than what's going on in the dreams. But the dream itself is not something that you're in control of.
Okay.
But the key thing is, Fred, is that the unconscious mind is very active, it's very busy, and you're very aware of something that, you know, in the room should occur. But typically, you're not actively paying attention. It's only when you wake up that the conscious mind sort of kicks into action and you start thinking about the day ahead. And so the conscious mind gives you the direction. It gives you the intention for what you're going to spend your life doing throughout the day. So you've got the unconscious mind, which is obviously one aspect of your mind. You've got the subconscious, which is where your belief systems and your self-image is developed. You've got the non-conscious, which is responsible for the motor skills. And you've finally got the captain of the ship, which happens to be the conscious mind. But the conscious mind gives the direction. It doesn't carry out the action. It's not powerful enough. It's not fast enough. So the reason why I'm explaining these different states of mind, Fred, is that in research, in neuroscience, that these minds, they don't exist. They can only research the brain. And so any mind is just kind of an epiphenomenon of brain activity. They can't describe the minds that I'm talking about. Now, there are lots of people that work with the subconscious mind. They try and help people improve golf, for instance, by using things like hypnosis and NLP, trying to change self-image and belief systems, which work by you shutting down for a moment the conscious mind, you park it to one side, whilst you go in and implant new memories into the area for the subconscious mind. So what you're trying to do, Fred, is override what were dominant memories with new memories. You know, we are purely memories. Everything that we experience are created from experiences that we've had and stored as memories. So if you've got a bad memory that's preventing you from performing, it is possible to go in and replace that with a much more empowering one. But it takes time, it takes effort. But the point is, Fred, changing subconscious patterns doesn't change the motor skills. It doesn't change the non-conscious skills that you're trying to develop. You see, the non-conscious mind, in essence, Fred, once the motor skill has been developed, is perfect if we keep the conscious mind away from it.
And that's the big question, right? How do you do that?
You play target-oriented golf.
Boy, because, did I walk into that one.
Well, you know, this is the reason why I've developed the work, Fred. It takes time to understand the subject matter and to go and apply it in practice and in your play. But people spend 20 years trying to learn how to swing a golf club. Why don't they try and learn how to trust themselves to swing a golf club when they've developed other skills in their lives successfully by getting the conscious mind out of the picture?
But you're not really serious about why do they question themselves on their mechanics, because it doesn't go well every single time you swing the club, so you're always questioning yourself.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, Fred. From the very first golf lesson, when the club is put into your hand and you have your attention taken to how to grip the golf club and you try and hit a golf ball whilst your attention is internal and probably on the grip, you hit a poor golf shot, you naturally attribute that poor golf shot with something that you're doing physically wrong. So you spend a lot of time focusing on trying to improve your grip whilst hitting golf balls. Once you've got your grip feeling right, but you're still hitting poor golf balls, you then switch your attention to your stance or your posture or your takeaway or your any other number of body parts.
And isn't that the point, that there are so many different things that can go wrong? How can you be unconscious about it when you're trying to analyze and practice awareness of where it is and what's going wrong?
Yeah, well, that's the point, Fred, is that if you spend your life trying to develop the motor skill with that conscious thought process of trying to control that skill, you're never going to experience a trust in it. Now, the reason why I mentioned my partner, Dr. Tony Paparo, was because he spent his life in research dedicated to understanding attentional focus in relation to motor skills acquisition. And what he's done is developed a golf coaching program that I believe every PGA coach and any golf coach out there should understand. Because what he's advocating, Fred, is that whilst an individual is learning how to develop the motor skills to swing a golf club, they need to be keeping the conscious mind busy and occupied whilst moving into the specific positions that the individual is trying to move into based on the coach's advice. So, you know, you might be aware of the concept of Tim Galway in A Game of Golf, where he advocates the concept of back hit. The idea of this, Fred, is that by saying something whilst you're moving the body, you're keeping the conscious mind engaged so that it allows the non-conscious mind to move the body. You can't be attending to the body if you're engaging the mind with that command. Now, what Dr. Paparo has done is developed a very systematic way of a golfer developing a golf swing without hitting golf balls, first of all. Because you need to develop the motor skills for swinging a golf club before you actually start trying to apply it to a golf ball. Because what happens is, whilst you've got the golf ball there, Fred, and you're trying to not only develop the motor skill, you're reacting every time to where the golf ball's going, you're constantly doubting the fact that you're in the right position. So your conscious mind is constantly switching to and from different body parts, and there's never any control over the attention. And that's what we're trying to explain in our work, is that the attentional focus needs to be controlled not only out on the golf course when you're trying to perform, but it needs to be controlled whilst you're developing the motor skills for a golf swing. Because without being aware of your attentional focus, the mind is doing whatever it chooses to do, wherever the individual chooses to think. And consequently, when it comes to playing golf, if you spend your whole time consciously practicing the information that you're consciously being taught, you have no choice but to consciously play. And therefore, you never get to that place where you're out there experiencing a trust in the golf swing or the putting stroke that you would do in any other life skill. Let me tell you the importance of the target, Fred. if you and I were to go out onto a park and we had some balls in our hands and we were simply, I was asking you to simply throw the ball at different targets, you intuitively would know how hard to throw the ball based on the target selection. Your attention would be always external. Your mind would typically be quiet, and your non-conscious mind would be allowed to throw the ball.
All right, can I stop you right there?
Go ahead.
All righty. Let's take that analogy that you were bringing, and let's put it into, say, shooting a basketball. All right? Go ahead. Yeah. There's the basket. Throw the ball up to the basket. And unconsciously, I would think, okay, I just need to do that. Right? Just this motion here, and it'll go in. But it doesn't go in. Right?
Okay.
So when I'm out on the driving range, or when you and I are working out, and we're just working on practicing my swing, I'm on the range. When you're on the range, there's nothing that can go wrong, really. It's like there's no consequences to something going wrong. But when you're about to take a golf shot during a round of golf, that's, I guess, when the doubt would come in. That's when you'd have problems, because then you'd go, if I don't get this right, there are consequences.
Yeah, but you're switching to a different aspect of golf performance here, Fred, because you're starting to talk about the concept of psychological performance, whereby if an individual is having all of these thoughts that you're talking about, then they haven't got a sense of control over what it is that they're trying to achieve. And what I'm saying is that those thoughts do occur because the individual hasn't developed a very systematic way of guiding themselves through that period of time that I specialize in, which is that time between stepping in and executing the golf shot. You see, many people recognize that they try and break up the golf shot into this concept of a think box and a play box, whereby you're doing all of your strategizing and then you step behind the ball and then you stop your thinking and you just move into playing. Unfortunately, Fred, you can't stop thinking, and that's the point, is that when you step in to play your golf shot, the individual's attentional focus, if it's not being controlled, introduces all of those other erroneous thoughts that you're talking about. And it's that the fact that you're trying to stop thinking leaves you so vulnerable, because you actually need to be really focusing your attention during that period of time between stepping in and executing. That's when you really need to be concentrating, not pretending that everybody's having a great time, because all you're doing is leaving yourself vulnerable to a situational event that comes in and destroys your ability to swing the golf club. So jumping back moment to that concept of throwing a basketball, Fred. When you're throwing the basketball, you miss the shot. That's okay. You're not going to make every shot. But the point is that your attention is naturally external. You're not thinking about how to throw the ball.
Mm.
You're not thinking about how to throw the ball. Your attention needs to be on the basket.
On the target?
On the target, yeah. Now, the concept in golf of targeting is very important. It's something we need to talk about, because there are many theories of golf instruction that suggest that you shouldn't have to pay attention to the target once you've aligned yourself to it, Fred, because it doesn't go anywhere. At the end of the day, once you've aligned yourself to it, why do you need to think about the target? Well, based on our discussion that we've had so far, if you're not thinking about the target when you're trying to execute your action, what are you choosing to think about?
Mm-hmm.
You see, the target, primarily what target-oriented golf is about, is helping a person establish that visualization of the target, Fred, as they're executing their action. So if their conscious mind is occupied with the visualization of the target, then it allows the non-conscious mind to swing the golf club. And it will do so because you're giving it a clear statement of intention. Your conscious mind has a clear picture of what it's trying to achieve, and it allows the non-conscious mind to follow through. The non-conscious mind cannot carry out that action if you don't have a clear target in mind. And that's the reason why many people struggle with this concept of target orientation because they look at their target, Freds, but they don't see it. And because they don't see it, when they look back at the ball, their attentional focus shifts away from target onto the ball, onto the takeaway, onto the water, onto the out of bounds, onto don't muck this up. Whatever chooses to jump in becomes the focus of your attention at that time, and the non-conscious mind responds accordingly.
Colin, I don't understand what you mean by they don't see the target.
Okay. If you and I, Fred, were standing on a tee box and I was observing you looking down the fairway, I wouldn't have a clue what the focus of your attention was. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, if I was to then say to you, Fred, can you see that red roof in the distance? By giving you a description of that object, I've brought your attention to that object. So you are now seeing the object that I've brought your attention to. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're looking down the fairway, typically what's happening is that people are very aware of the water and the out of bounds and the bunkers, and oftentimes are drawing their attention to the very things that they don't want to be hitting their ball at.
Sure.
So the very important thing, Fred, is that in the brain, the visual system is quite complex. There are many pathways to taking information in through the eye. It hits the back of the brain, and then it goes off in many different directions. Majority of the information that we process in our brain, we don't have to attend to, Fred, visually. And what I mean by that is we navigate through traffic in our car, processing lots of information visually, but we're not paying attention to it. It's the same when you're walking and doing anything. We're always processing visual information, but we don't attend to everything. When we want to attend to something, Fred, typically there's another process that happens in the brain in which you compare the visual imagery that you're looking at with a pre-existing memory of what it is you're looking at, and you use a label to bring a description to that object. So when you read, for instance, a paper or a book, do you ever hear that internal dialogue, the internal voice that goes on in your head when you're reading a paragraph of information?
Oh, I have four or five voices in my head when I'm reading.
Well, we're not getting into your schizophrenia right now, Fred. The important thing is, the question I asked was, why do you think, well, when you're trying to read, why do you have to use that internal dialogue? Because... Mm-hmm. We're processing visual information. Where's the internal dialogue coming from? Well, the key thing is, Fred, is that every single word that you're reading, you're actually comparing with a pre-existing memory of that visual information, and you're using your internal dialogue to bring the words to the focus of your attention. So that's the seeing process. The difference between looking at the page and seeing the information requires your attentional focus to be involved.
I'm with you now.
Good, because it's really important, this, Fred. That same process that you use when you're reading your internal dialogue, how is that internal dialogue any different to your thinking process when you're out on the golf course? You know, when the erroneous thoughts are coming in, it's the same internal dialogue. It's just that it's not coming off of a page. It's random information that you're pulling out from your mind. Now, my point is this, Fred. If you're looking down the fairway to describe your target, you've got to see your target. You've got to describe it to yourself. It's not enough just to look at it. And it's the same thing applies when you're over your golf ball. You've got yourself nice and settled over your golf ball. If all you do is look back out down the fairway, it doesn't bring the target to your focus of attention unless you describe it to yourself, so that when you feel like you're connected to your target, you can bring your eyes back to the ball and still feel connected to it in order to execute the swing at it. So the concept of target orientation involves looking at something but using your internal dialogue to reinforce what it is that you're looking at, Fred. The reason why this is important is that if you're using that internal dialogue to keep your attention on the target, then you cannot be thinking about your golf swing. In fact, that's the whole point of this, is that you're trying to keep your attention external in order to allow your non-conscious mind to swing the golf club. If I was to ask you that I was going to put a local theatre production on, and I was to ask you that I want you to be the lead in the show, the lead actor. Now, what would be the first thing that you'd ask for from me in order to perform on stage?
A script.
Okay. This is important. Why would you need a script?
Because if I'm going to be in a play and memorizing my lines and performing my lines, I got to know the outline and I got to know the direction that we're all headed in.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what would happen if you went on the stage without having learned your lines?
You don't want me to ad lib.
Yeah, but unfortunately, Fred, this is what every golfer is doing on the golf course.
What did you set me up?
This is the point of attentional focus, Fred, is that as an actor, you go and perform because you know exactly what it is you're going to deliver.
Mm-hmm.
And mentally, you've learnt your lines and we go out there and deliver them. And your non-conscious mind just goes and does whatever it is that the conscious mind is directing it to do. Now, the purpose of my work is to help a golfer develop their own personal scripts that keep their attentional focus systematically occupied with the same tasks every time they prepare to play a golf shot. So that period of time between stepping in and executing their swing, Fred, which takes about 12 to 14 seconds, is typically time where the golfer's conscious mind is allowed to run free. And they are trying to go through a physical pre-shot routine. But under the surface, the conscious mind is very variable. And it's that variability in their conscious thought process which creates such variability in their outcomes. But the visualization, Fred, that needs to happen at execution, which is target orientation, is denied if the individual does not prepare themselves for that moment successfully. And what I mean by that is if there's no proper state management, if there's no proper breathing, if there's no proper awareness of the body before you get to target orientation, then any single erroneous thought that comes in can elevate the person's anxiety level, their arousal level, and that adrenaline flow stops the muscles from performing as they would do if they were relaxed. And whatever it is, Fred, that is choosing to create that arousal means that the individual's attention must be on something other than target. And that's the key thing about target, you see. There are many theories that suggest that the target creates anxiety in golfers, Fred. What's your opinion on that?
The anxiety produced by, I'm trying to figure out, is this, like, do we create this on ourselves, this anxiety of, and is this, are we trying to get away from that completely?
Well, the point is, Fred, the anxiety doesn't happen to you.
You create that?
You create it by how you choose to think at that moment.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you're only having those erroneous thoughts because you haven't developed a systematic process to keep those erroneous thoughts at bay. You know, you can't have these anxious, anxiety-provoking thoughts if you're busy focused on something else that's designed specifically to keep your state correct in order to get target-oriented.
But there's so many things to be focused on.
No, that's the point, Fred. Well, let me ask you this question, Fred. Can you pay attention to more than one thing at a time?
Unfortunately, yes.
Give me an example.
I can be in a conversation with somebody and hear a conversation going on behind me and following that as well.
Okay. What's actually happening, and you might not necessarily notice it, but your attention is actually switching between the two very fast.
Okay.
You cannot have your attention in two places at once. You're aware of one whilst you're attending to the other.
Okay.
but you're not really attending to them both at the same time. And it's an important distinction to understand here, because you in effect can't be attending to two sources of information simultaneously, but you can certainly be aware of sources of information simultaneously. So you can certainly hear something whilst reading. You're aware of the noise, but you're not necessarily paying attention to it. Your attention might flick to it, but then come back. Or you might be looking at something that's occupying your attention, and you might hear a noise. Your attention flicks to that, and then comes back. It doesn't. You're not in two places at the same time.
Right. No, it definitely flicks. I would agree with you that it flicks back and forth, but it flicks back so fast that I can pick up and gather the information from both sides simultaneously. It feels like I'm doing this simultaneously, is that I can get it here. Yeah, okay, I got that part. I'll get this part, and I'm piecing both of them together.
Yeah, it's an illusion, Fred, but that's the nature of the brain. Most of what we perceive.
Most of my life, Colin, is an illusion. I just want you to know that.
You're not alone there. Everybody's life is the same. What we're doing within the brain is often predicting what it is that we expect to see rather than actually seeing what is in front of us. Because the majority of the time, our brain is in a state of processing information, and therefore it's doing it at the non-conscious, subconscious, unconscious level. We aren't consciously attending to everything. We simply cannot. So a lot of the information that arises into consciousness has already been predicted by other aspects of your brain, and what you see is a prediction from your brain, not what is actually out there. And the way I demonstrate this, Fred, is to people is, have you ever seen little paragraphs written in which all of the words are spelt incorrectly except for the first and last letters?
Mm-hmm.
And you're able to read it as if it's written correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's the predictive process happening, Fred. You're reading those words, and you're visually processing it. Now, if your eyes were simply giving you the information to your brain, then what you would be saying would sound like the garbage that's actually written on the page. But it doesn't, because what you're doing is you're taking the visual information, comparing it to a memory. You're then using your internal dialogue to say, well, that's what it was saying. That's what it says, when it wasn't that at all, you see. So your predictive nature of the brain convinces us that we're seeing something that we're not. And that's the reason why targeting is important in golf, in respect of we don't see the target unless we actually support it with that internal dialogue process. In essence, what's happening, Fred, is we might be looking down the fairway, but unless we describe the target to ourselves, we don't get chance to see the target when we're looking at the ball.
Can you give me a practical demonstration of how to focus on a find your target, focus on your target, and only focus on your target through the completion of your swing?
Yeah, well, the key thing is, Fred, we've got to establish, first of all, the difference between our desired our outcome and our target, because there is a lot of people that suggest that the target creates anxiety. Now, what creates anxiety in golfers often is the fact that they are thinking about their desired outcome for the shot, which happens to be where the ball will be finishing. Now, in golf, we cannot control that. And if you are paying attention or trying to control where the ball will finish, that happens to be a future event, which can create an anxiety response because you're not in control of that.
This sounds like a contradiction to the target, though.
Yeah, but the desired outcome is not the same as the target, more often than not, Fred. And that's the reason why this discussion is important.
That's why, to me, that's a very thin line.
Well, it might be a thin line, but let me give you an example. Let's take chipping, for example, Fred. Mm-hmm. When you're going to chip a ball onto the green and your hole is obviously on the other side of the green, clearly your desired outcome for that shot is to get the ball in the hole. But what would be your target?
What would be my target on the chip?
Yeah.
Is to me, the target would be like a 3-4 foot circle around the hole, try to get it in that area.
Okay. You see, what I'm advocating is that with a chip, you would typically chip the ball onto the green, and you'd identify a landing spot.
A landing spot. Okay, yeah. Right. So my target would be the landing spot. And then see, pick the landing spot and try to guesstimate how much roll I'm going to get if it lands there, and will it get me into that circle. So, yeah, I guess the target would be the landing spot.
Yeah, that's important, Fred, because you've already differentiated. You know what your desired outcome is, but you've separated that from your target.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, your target selection determines what club it is you're going to use to play that shot.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the target is very different to your desired outcome. And when you're trying to play the shot, you're aligning yourself to the target point, not to the desired outcome.
Okay.
Because if you've chosen the right target and you choose the right club, Fred, you'll get the desired outcome. So psychologically, can you see that there's a difference between what your target is and your desired outcome on that shot?
On that shot, yes.
Yeah, but that same principle can be extrapolated to every single other golf shot. First of all, you've got to ask yourself when you're stepping into a golf shot, what's my desired outcome for this? But then you've got to say, what's my target for this golf shot? And very rarely will they be the same. Your desired outcome and your target won't be the same place, because we don't hit perfectly straight golf shots when we're playing golf. And so because we cannot control where the ball finishes, Fred, we can only control where the ball starts. The idea of target orientation is to establish what on that starting line you're hitting the ball at that's going to allow you to achieve your desired outcome. So you put yourself on a tee box, for instance, and you look down the fairway. You see where you want the ball to finish on the fairway. But that landing spot on the fairway isn't where your target will be. Your target, because there's nothing there often that gives you a clearness for the visualization process. So you typically, what you do is you find a line on that, either on that line where you're wanting the desired outcome, or you might even move left or right of that desired outcome and establish a target that's on your target line. So it might be something that's off the golf course. It might be a roof on a house, or it might be an electricity pylon. It might be a tree trunk, but it's always something, Fred, that gives you a clear visual connection with where you're going to start that ball. Because it's that target that you're trying to commit the swing towards, knowing full well you'll get your desired outcome. You've got to let go of that outcome and just trust that the club you've chosen and the target you're selecting will help you achieve that desired outcome.
So when I'm standing behind the ball, looking down the fairway, visualizing where I want the ball to what my target is, but I also look at the end target, the ball, and then a point just beyond the ball as where I want to start the line. Is that my target?
No, it's not, Fred. You're only using that point behind the ball as your alignment. It's helping your alignment to your chosen target.
Okay.
But once you've aligned yourself to your chosen target, Fred, you forget about that spot in front of the ball, because that was only used to help for alignment purposes.
Okay.
But the key thing is that once you've established that you're going to hit the ball towards a predetermined target that is visually attractive to you, you're always looking for something that's easy to see, because that's the whole purpose of target orientation. You're trying to give yourself, you're trying to make it easy for yourself by giving yourself a clear target. If all you do is try and establish where you want the ball to finish on the fairway, you end up with just a big load of fairway and not an awful lot of focus. You don't give yourself a clear focal point to hitting your ball towards. And again, you're psychologically stepping into a place which can be creating the anxiety response, because you're trying to control where the ball finishes, and you simply cannot do that. And therefore, being a future event, you create the anxiety response due to the lack of control that you perceive over it. So You know, if I was to stand in front of you, Fred, hands out, you get it, you throwing the ball to me, the target and the desired outcome would be the same, my hands. And as I move away from you, you still recognize that the target and the hands are the same place, but you've got absolute freedom in your actions because you've got that clear target to throw the ball at. If I put my hand, just as you're about to throw the ball and I put my hands behind my back, two things typically happen. I make you think, where's my target? And I stop your flow of action.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's exactly what happens when you look back at the ball, Fred, and you haven't got a clear statement of intention in your mind, because your attention then shifts to something else. And that creates the funky swings that people experience more often than not. It's the lack of clear intention with aligned attention that creates the poor golf swing. So this concept of putting, targeting is important as well in putting, because unless you've got a straight putt to a hole, the target and the hole, the target and your desired outcome are also different. You know, if you've got an uphill putt, Fred, to a hole that's a straight uphill putt, your typical target point will move behind the hole, because you're having to put more force onto the ball to allow it to go uphill. So you're putting through the hole, basically, to ensure that you've given the ball enough energy. And if it's a downhill putt, you clearly don't want to be putting out to at the hole. You putt at a spot in front of the hole, and that becomes your focal point for your putt. So you're establishing how much energy you have to impart on the golf ball based on your target selection point. And as soon as you start to introduce break left and right, your target point starts to shift left and right of the hole as well. Mm. So you've always got, Fred, the desired outcome of getting the ball in the hole. But if you actually attempt to putt always with your attention on the hole, when you step into it and align yourself to your chosen line, but then switch your attention back to the hole, what actually happens, Fred, is you end up pushing or pulling the ball off of the target line because you're thinking about the desired outcome rather than the target point on that line that you've chosen. There's a system out there called Aimpoint, which is excellent for green reading. It teaches you...
Yeah, we've talked about it, and we've had him on the show.
Okay, well, look, the idea of it, Fred, is the fact that it establishes what your line is. It gives you great confidence to know
right. That's
the line that you're going to putt on.
Right.
Where I differ from that system is that they advocate that the target or the aim point is always perpendicular effectively to the hole. So it's, you know, perpendicular to where the hole is. I don't agree with that, because clearly there's many times where the ball goes nowhere near perpendicular to the hole. You only have to putt it a few inches and it will roll off and break and do all sorts of things. So your target point is on that aim line, but it's not the aim point that they are advocating, because, again, it's a great system for green reading, but once you've got your line, the advocate is then suggesting that what you need to do then is establish how hard or how much you need to control the putter, you know, what speed do you need to put on the putt. But that's bringing your attention back to the conscious control of the putter head. And that, again, destroys the putting stroke, because you're consciously trying to control that stroke again, Fred. So the idea of targeting is to keep your attention external and allows the non-conscious to putt the ball. And that's the reason why I love the green reading system. I just disagree with where the individual's attention is taken when they then have to putt. Because, again, there is nothing that we perform by consciously controlling our action, and therefore, by staying external, by staying target-oriented, i.e. on target instead of outcome, you start to separate the difference psychologically, but also, all you're recognizing with a putt, Fred, is you can't do anything with the putter other than putt the ball on a straight line. It's designed to do nothing other than hit a ball on a straight line. So you've got to establish the line that you're going to send it on and how far down that line your target point will be to allow that ball to break off towards your desired outcome, which is the hole.
Mm-hmm.
You follow?
Yep.
So you don't always hit the target, Fred. The point of target orientation is not to hit the target. In fact, it's only on chipping where you actually hit, you have an opportunity to hit the target that you've chosen. But every other shot with target orientation, what you're doing is giving yourself a sense of commitment to something in the distant that will allow the non-conscious self to react to that target. And if you've chosen the right target, you get your desired outcome. And that applies to every golf shot. So as I said, when the idea of this work that I've developed, Fred, is the individual allows them to step into every golf shot, regardless of whether or not they're on a tee box or on a putting green, they can apply the same mental process to preparing to play for the shot. So you don't actually see driving, chipping, pitching, putting as different disciplines. They're all just different golf clubs, but you apply the same mental discipline to them. That simplifies the game, Fred, because you're ultimately just following the same script every time you step in to play a golf shot. The only difference you have is identifying what your chosen target is, which will determine what club you're going to use to play that shot. And the real challenge, so again, what I'm saying is that target orientation is trying to help golfers be in control of events. So the target is something that you are in control of. You've chosen it yourself, and you're ultimately hitting the ball towards it. You're not trying to control where the ball finishes in this instance. You cannot control where the ball finishes, but again, if you've chosen the right target and chosen the right club, then you've just got to trust the fact that based on your chosen, you know, your selections, that you'll get your desired outcome. But golf is not a game of perfect, as we know. It's a game of identifying how do you achieve the best outcomes based on the fact that you've got the opportunity to choose what it is your targets are. It's interesting, Fred. When it comes to putting, it's a little bit more difficult because, in effect, we don't really get a choice of targets. You know, if we've read the green and established the line, then we need to find that target point on that line. But if we choose a different line, then we've got to choose a different target point. It's you know, there's nothing concrete there for you to say that's definitely my target. It comes down to you being intuitive as to how much energy you have to impart on that golf ball to allow gravity to pull it towards your hole. And all of this stuff is, again, it's beyond your control. All you can do is assess the shot, choose your target, and hit your ball towards the chosen target. Now, to get to that place of target orientation, Fred, you've got to prepare yourself mentally as you step in order to give yourself a chance to, you know, visualize that target that you've chosen. Otherwise, and the reason why target orientation hasn't worked for probably people that have tried it, is that as you step in, the erroneous thoughts that come along can elevate arousal. When you're looking down the fairway, you're seeing all of the hazards. And when you look back at the ball, you're thinking about a swing thought. Target is nowhere to be seen. And you know, it's natural then to believe that the poor golf shot was caused by your poor swing, as if the swing itself was the problem, not the fact that it wasn't getting any clear statement of intention as to what to do. Mm. And that comes back to, you can't become target-oriented on the golf course, Fred, unless you practice target orientation on the range, because this has to become your dominant mentality in order for you to take it out to the golf course.
And do you find that more people on the range, that they're focused on just striking the ball over and over as opposed to using a target?
Well, they might have a target, Fred, but they're not actually paying attention to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You see, the whole purpose of my work is to help people understand how to effectively manage their state in order to get to this state of target orientation. You can't get your state right if you don't have control over your self-talk. And you can't then get your attention in the right place if you're on target, if your self-talk is out of control, you see. So it's an interaction, Fred. You've got to get your state right to open up your ability to focus, but you can't focus until you get your state right. So you have to have proper breathing strategies and techniques as you're preparing to execute in order to really open up your ability to get to that target orientation. The whole purpose of this work, Fred, is, as I said, is to get to that place where you're ultimately experiencing a freedom in your physical actions, just as you would do hitting a baseball or using a hammer. It's just a tool that you're using to carry out a task. You're not thinking about how to use the tool.
We've been into this conversation for 59 minutes now, Colin, and I want to.
Quick, didn't you, Fred?
Yeah, I know. I looked up. I'm like, you're kidding. 59 minutes. What I really wanted to get into, I think we've gotten the point and the understanding of target orientation as you've been talking about. I really wanted to talk about the stage of skills. If I've got this correct, from unconscious incompetence all the way through unconscious competence, can we cover that?
Yeah, absolutely, Fred. The key thing is that these stages of learning that are often presented to people, the idea of these stages is that we move from a process of unconscious incompetence, which is where we don't really know the skills that we need to learn before we start to develop the skills. But once we acquire an understanding, we start to become what's called unconscious competent, whereby we conscious.
It's not just me. Okay. Good. All right. We start at unconscious incompetence.
Yeah, unconscious incompetence.
And the next stage would be conscious incompetence.
Yeah. So we're going through a series of repetitions in which we are focusing on the skill. And this conscious incompetence is where most golfers are trying to develop their swing. And many people, through repetition, start to show some skill and they develop what is conscious competence. You see, they're still thinking about the swinging of the golf clubs at this point, but they are becoming better than those people who have just started. And once you've started to develop that proficiency, in normal life skills, we shift those motor skills to a state of unconscious competence. So we stop consciously trying to control the motor skill. So that state of unconscious competence, Fred, does not happen through repetition, which is the biggest mistake people make, is that they believe if they keep practicing the same way, they will get to a place of trust in that skill. Mm-hmm. The only time you get to a place of trust in the skill is when you actually stop paying attention to it. And the way you achieve that in golf is by switching your attention away from it and onto the target. That shift, Fred, happens naturally in most other life skills because we naturally want to be interested in where we're going.
But you have to have some confidence in your golf swing to get there. So you can let go of it, don't you?
Clearly, Fred. And this comes back to how you acquire the skill. And hopefully you'll have an opportunity to talk in detail with my partner, who spent his life helping people understand the skills acquisition process. You cannot have confidence in a skill that's not obviously been developed. But how that skill is developed, Fred, it requires you having to allow yourself to shift your attention away from that skill. You will stop yourself from ever getting to that place of trusting in it whilst you constantly only focus on it. So the purpose of the work that I'm doing, Fred, is to give people an alternative way of practicing at the range called a trusting mode. So if you imagine there's a training mode and a trusting mode, training mode is where an individual has gone to the range to work on a skill, a technical skill. When they've spent maybe half an hour doing that, and how that's being done can be significantly improved, but I'm not going to get involved in that discussion. That's where I'd like you to talk to my partner. But once you put aside the training mentality, Fred, by switching into trust mode, what actually happens is you stop the analysis of your swing. You simply allow that swing to be what it is as it is developed. And so by developing a way of trust in that swing, by practicing breathing, state management, target orientation, you start to allow your attention to shift external. And your motor skills, Fred, automatically start to move up into that state of unconscious competence because you're not consciously inhibiting them. It's the conscious inhibiting of the motor skill, because you're consciously always trying to control it, that stops that from happening. You know, and that comes into, again, it's very important to understand that whilst you're trying to develop a motor skill, you should also be training your attention at the same time, but that isn't happening today. So by using Dr. Paparo's methods, you're able to keep the conscious mind engaged with a specific command whilst you're allowing the non-conscious mind to move the golf club into the appropriate positions you need for a golf swing. The idea, Fred, is that we don't have, well, there are systems out there that do keep people within a framework, i.e., you know, when we're sitting in a car learning, we're constrained by the vehicle. When we ride a bike, we're constrained by the vehicle. When we try and swing a golf club, there's nothing constraining us, is there? And yet there are systems out there, like the K-Vest and others, that allow you to be effectively training your body but whilst being told whether or not you're in the correct positions through verbal feedback, biofeedback. But at that time, Fred, the conscious mind is still being left to its own devices, and it's typically involved in the swing. We need to get the conscious mind out of the swing in order for that skills to move to that place of unconscious competence that we're trying to achieve. And so, yes, it does require, golf does require an element of time where you do develop the skill. But if you're trying to develop the motor skill whilst hitting golf balls, your attention is simply so disparate, it's on so many different things, that you really don't have an opportunity to ever develop the single-pointed concentration that I'm talking about through target orientation. So what we're trying to advocate is that when a person learns, is working on their technique, taking the advice that's being given to them by their coach, it's not enough for them to be hitting golf balls and reacting to the outcome and trying to consciously change their motor skill, because you never develop a consistent motor pattern for swinging that golf club because you're always consciously trying to change it. It's like having a piece of jelly, Fred. You never let set. You constantly shake it around and you're ending up developing competing memories, which you never really know which ones you're going to draw on to swing that golf club. And so you're trying to ultimately allow the conscious mind to be parked for a time to allow the non-conscious self to move the body to the appropriate positions, and you start to, through repetition of these exercises, you start to develop a proficient golf swing. And in fact, if there's no ball in place, you know, have you ever noticed how great people's practice swings are when on the golf course, and yet when they step up to the golf ball, that swing kind of disappears?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that's what's happening, Fred. The attentional focus is very different in when you're trying to hit the golf ball, because you're no longer just swinging the club through to your target. You're actually trying to hit the golf ball or trying to control the swing, and that destroys the swing.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're advocating is that you develop a proficiency in your golf swing, start off developing the swing, put a tee down on the ground, start hitting that without evaluating where the tee's going. Just start feeling your golf swing is starting to be consistent. And when you start to introduce the ball, you'll notice that the individual, you know, your attention starts to go to the ball. And it's that in itself which is a problem, because you end up trying to just hit the ball rather than swing through it to the target. So this whole process, Fred, involves slowly introducing these concepts so that people can transition through a skills acquisition phase relatively quick compared to what they're doing today. You know, years and years and years and years and years of repetition and practice doesn't manifest as trust on the golf course. Something is wrong. You would think that people could learn to trust their golf swings, but they never do. Well, that's because of how they are practicing, learning and playing the game. And what we're trying to do through our program is to just introduce a new set of skills that will make the most of the great PGA instruction that they're being given. But they need to learn how to shift their attention away from that in order to experience what it's like to play golf, not just swing golf clubs.
Excellent. All right. Well, listen, Colin, I think we need to wrap this up. We're 70 minutes into the conversation.
Yep. Sorry, Fred. We could talk all day, I'm sure.
Obviously we can. But I want to have a little respect to the audience. And actually, I'd like to ask the audience a favor. Does this resonate with you? I know we've talked about putting, we've talked about, you know, aim point, we've talked about various mechanics and mental game, things like that. But this specifically, how does this resonate with you? Does this work for you? Are you get this at all? And if I would love, just click on the Hey Fred button and send me an email. Tell me what you thought of this conversation with Colin. Hopefully you got to hear the entire thing. And again, how people get in touch with you, where you are, and how to work with you. If they want more.
Fred, my website is Target Oriented Golf. That's Target Oriented, which is OrientedGolf.com. golf.com. I provide remote services. I ultimately help golfers. They go away. They video their pre-shot routines. And through a series of training manuals and videos, we help change their practice and methods so that they develop a new mental pre-shot procedure, not a routine. The idea of it is a routine is something you do without thought. That's the last thing that we need in order to get our focus in the right place and the same place every time. So what I do is help them develop a mental procedure which will give them a very disciplined, systematic approach to every golf shot. And it simplifies their golf, but it takes time to practice and learn, I'm afraid. It's no quick fix here, Fred.
No, there never is.
There never is in golf.
Well, there is. The Golf Smarter podcast is. Colin, it's been, like I said, it's been 8 years. It's been 6 years. It's been a great talking to you again. I'm so glad that you're still focused on your target and that you're keeping us focused on our target. It's really been great to have you back on the show.
It's been a pleasure, Fred, and I can't thank you enough for giving me the opportunity.
If you use Twitter, please follow us at Golf Smarter, hashtag Sound Advice. We also have a Facebook page at Golf Smarter. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, and this program was suggested by a Golf Smarter member, so I am listening, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.